Chris. Today we are going to be comparing and contrasting a message model and a data model. We're going to be talking about the pros and cons of each and what their differences are. So, Chris, what is a message model?
What do you mean?
Well, we throw around the words data model and message model a lot, and we kind of went into what a data model is last time, but message model is a pretty common thing in this industry, and so I think we should have a definition of it before we move on and compare it with a data model.
Sure. A message model is, it is a form of a data model, but generally what happens when we build a message model is we take a message set, so, you know, a sort of communication language or a standard, and we just directly map that message set into our data model, and we call that our data model. So what's actually happening is we're representing our messages in the data model and not what the messages talk about in the data model. You have this puzzled look on your face. Did I say something wrong?
Well, I'm curious more. So if you could distinguish message set, I think that's something that most people are familiar with. Maybe not that name, but it's the idea of a IDL structures, you know, ICDs that define and here are the things I'm sending around. What does a message model add on top of a message set?
Okay, so you just dropped two big alphabet soups in that. You said ICD and IDL. So just for the audience, that's an interface control document. This is generally how we describe interfaces or communications between different systems. And then you also said IDL, the interface description language. This is a standard for describing interfaces that explain our computer classes, our data types that we send back and forth as messages, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One of the standards I'm most familiar with, because I spent a long time working, is the NATO Standardization Agreement 4586. And that's a whole lot of words to say. This is a DoD, or rather NATO standard, for how we talk to UAVs, unmanned air vehicles, or as a lot of people like to call them, drones. It sounds scarier, right? So what we do is we define a whole bunch of messages. We pick, you know, this is the message of how I say to steer the vehicle. This is the message of how I tell the vehicle what mode to be in. This is the message that I use to terminate flight. This is the message I use to put up and down the landing gear. And each one of these is a distinct message. And we document this using English language in our ICD, again, our interface control document. And a message set becomes this collection of all of these messages that we use to send commands and receive status from a system.
Right, so how does a message model interact with that then?
So a message model is really a sort of pejorative term for describing how we take and construct a data model. So a well-constructed data model has a collection of entities that represent the things the messages talk about. So again, in our world, we talk a lot about aircraft, we talk a lot about landing gear, we talk about the control systems, we talk about, well, sometimes in scale, we talk about coffee, right? So we
famous
actually-
for our coffee models.
Famous for our coffee models, that's right, and our coffee mugs. When we build a data model, a proper data model for these things, we actually talk about coffee. We talk about the coffee maker. We talk about maybe the grind of the coffee. We don't talk about the message that says, add coffee to the coffee maker. Or we don't talk about the message that says, order a cup of coffee. We don't talk about, and I'll go back to the standardization 4586, again, STANAG we call it. They have this really interesting message called vehicle steering command. And it actually has three different commands in one message. And one of the modes is basically steering the vehicle. It tells it which direction to go and what speed to go. Another one of the modes tells it where to fly in a circle, like a loiterer, just station keeps. And the third mode is which waypoint it should fly to, where should it go. And it depends on the mode of the system as to which one of these commands is used. Now, if we were to build a message model, we would commingle these things in our data model, where the modes that a vehicle flies in are distinct modes from one another, and they should be modeled separately. Okay, so why would this be different? So how would we address this if we were talking about a data model? So instead of modeling the commands, we actually have a command that says steer the vehicle, and then that directly translates into our data model. Well, we wouldn't do that. In our data model, we would represent the vehicle. We would represent waypoints. We would represent, well, you don't usually just fly waypoints, right? A waypoint is just a place and a path. So typically you have a route. A route is a collection of waypoints. You fly here, then you fly there, then you fly there. You have another interesting thing that happened. If I tell you to go home, you're sitting at your office, you're sitting at your desk, you're doing your work. I say, go home, Jacob. Are you instantly home?
You know, sometimes, but sometimes. Usually not.
Only when you like enter in a parallel dimension?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But Sean, now see, this doesn't work for Sean because if I say, Sean, go home, you most of the time you are home, right?
True.
The benefits of a home office. But for most of us, there's a transit time. So I can give you a command, but your immediate state is still office. So 10 minutes later, you could be home. So, and that's whether or not you even accept the command.
Right, and that's something that's very hard to translate into a message model, but
it is
very easy to do in a data model.
Right, so here's the really crazy thing. In a message model, you would end up mapping these to two completely different unrelated things. There would be a message in your message model that says current position status, and then there would be a different message called commanded position. Well, what do they have in relation to one another? See, the actual concept is Jacob's position. That's what we want to talk about. So we have Jacob's current position and Jacob's commanded position. So when we have I'm going through all this to say that's another structure we build into a data model, is this concept of commanding something. Yet, Jacob has a commanded position and a current position, but both of these concepts deal with Jacob's position.
Right, and the relation of those two things is easy to see if you know the system and if you know the message set. But for someone who doesn't know either of those things and is just looking at the model, getting that information from a message model is very difficult, but getting that information from a data model is actually very simple because you can tie them all together.
Right. Now, you've just hit on something really, really important, and I'm going to ask the question, you guys answer it. When does it work to have one or to have a message model? It actually does work. When does it work to have a message model?
If you have a homogeneous system, you can say, okay, thou shalt use these messages.
Yes.
Forever. It's not too bad.
You're right. So you said two really important things that are homogeneous, so everybody uses the exact same messages. And two, you said it kind of quick, you said you must use these messages forever, meaning these messages don't change.
I believe there's a thou in there, makes it a little bit more official.
Makes it official?
So, yeah.
Thou shalt use these messages forever. If the messages don't change, then you don't have to worry about updating your system for keeping it updated with changes. You don't have to worry about it because you have one concrete message set that's immutable. It doesn't change, and it works because you don't have to bring together another person's ideas. So that's really what a message is, right?
Luckily, all of our systems are fully backwards compatible always, because that doesn't in any way inhibit future development. So we should be able to work with message models forever, right?
Software never changes after all.
No, software stays 100% the same.
So how do message models tend to work? How do message sets tend to work? If you define a message set, Sean, you define a message set for Jacob to communicate with, how do you guys actually achieve interoperability?
I think some of this, we have to look beyond the technical level. And sometimes you can say, well, here's my message set.
Yeah.
If you want to talk to me, you have to use it. You know, sometimes you're able to do that from the business perspective. You know,
yeah.
You're selling a box and, hey, you know, what I say goes.
Right.
That's
right.
One way.
So you've agreed on commonality.
Or forced commonality.
Forced
commonality. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be an agreement. You know, standards bodies, organizations will say, well, okay, we're going to have use this protocol, use these messages. And that can work for a bit,
Okay, when does it break down?
Well, I think it would break down, it could break down in many ways. One of them is, you know, new shiny language, new shiny framework comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone who had agreed on standard one now wants to move to standard two because it's, you know, more functional, better, whatever reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You could have other players into the field who don't want to abide that by that model, by that standard.
What happens when Jacob Co. creates the new widget that we now want to talk to?
And Jacob Co. is part of this, or he's completely new?
He's a new widget. Jacob creates a new... He's got the coffee maker that is internet-enabled, and now it's this magical device that we want to connect to everything, but we have our same message set. How are we going to integrate with Jacob's new magical coffee pot?
You just build a new message. Pop that right into the message model, and it won't conflict with anything.
See, you're saying that so straight-faced. Like, everybody can't see this like, wry smile that you have.
Someone's going to have to build a bridge or an adapter.
A bridge or an adapter.
Luckily, those are very cheap and very easy to come by.
Okay, Jacob is full of sarcasm today.
He's not totally wrong. A bridge or adapter between two things isn't too bad.
That's correct. That's a really good point. And that really gets to the heart of scale. Because one-to-one is not a problem. The problem is one-to-many and many-to-many. It doesn't scale. So we need a better approach.
And so that's where data models come in.
That's why we talk about data models. I want to pick on Stanag 4586 for one more second. I mentioned the vehicle steering command. This is my favorite one because it's the best example, right? The related message is, it's called loiter configuration. This is where you set up the pattern of the loiter pattern. Is it a circle? Is it a racetrack? Is it a figure eight? You know, what are we flying here? And you would think, if this is the message that deals with configuring the loiter, this would be how you set the position of the loiter, along with its length and its radius and all, you know, the size of the loiter. But it's not. So they've actually not put position in the loiter configuration message. So it's kind of like you say, set up the loiter, but don't set its position. The only way you set its position is by using this other thing called vehicle steering command. Now, this goes right back to your point a couple minutes ago, Jacob, where you said, if you're familiar with the message set, you might be able to look through the message set and find where these different components go. But in a data model, when you look at loiter and you say, oh, okay, I'm talking about loiter, well, all of its properties appear together because we're using a data model to document the semantics of the data. So it's the position of the loiter. It's not actually the position of the vehicle steering command because the vehicle steering command is not a thing.
Right, and it doesn't matter where those two things are in the message set because they both map to the same thing in the data model. So you can put them wherever you want in the message set.
That's correct.
I could put the loiter position in, azimuth elevation configuration.
Sure.
If I wanted to.
You could. And here's the really, really crazy thing. When you're only talking with one message set, you get a one-for-one mapping and life is good. As soon as you bring in a different message set, and maybe this is something that someone else created who had a slightly different look at the problem, well, all of a sudden they want all of the loiter commands together in one message. Well, I want to set up my loiter and its position and its altitude and its distance all in one message, which to me is a rational thing to think and do. But if they were to go to a message model, they would be very confused because the message model, these things don't line up, right? The message model sets up your data model with one specific person's perspective or one message's perspective. When you build a data model, you're not trying to put any particular perspective on it. You're just trying to represent a framework for capturing relationship of data.
So something I'm curious about, 4586, the history of these messages,
mm-hmm.
Why does the loiter configuration not contain the position? Was it added later on and they thought, well, we already have this thing that has the position, we don't need to send it twice, or do you know any of the history there?
So the specifics of that particular message predate my relationship with the standard, which started in 2004, by the way. So beyond just dating me, it predates the standard, or it dates the standard somewhat. My suspicion is that this reflects how one particular autopilot worked. Right? So this is actually an extension of what we're talking about. Someone had an autopilot, and the autopilot took a message that had loiter in it, and it had another message that had vehicle steering commands in it. And then that interface to that autopilot became the de facto standard. And then, we fast forward and we're saying, well, should this be our data model? And it's like, no, this shouldn't be our data model.
It shows one of the dangers of getting locked in to mm-hmm. a particular implementation.
Right.
Whereas with the data model, the messages are derived. They're artifacts from that. So you get all this flexibility for you. You can rearrange fields or change which message do you want to put this information in. Whereas with mm-hmm. the message model, you're sort of stuck with it.
Exactly. You lock into one very specific representation. And then we start, really what we're doing is we start combining syntax and then also the semantics. And what we do there, the semantics, again, are the meaning of the data. So when I say loiter command or loiter position, what I've done is I've encoded the semantics in the label. I've said, well, it's the position of the loiter. Well, we do this in a message model because we start saying, well, this is the vehicle steering command. And we have encoded the semantic of what we mean. Well, what are we commanding? The vehicle. And is it a command or a status? Well, it's a command. Well, how do we know? Because it's represented in the name and it's not reflected in the structure. And when we build a well-formed data model, it can be reflected in the structure.
So we've hit that a data model is much more useful and it's much more adaptable to change.
Yes.
And to adding new things to it. So with all the wonderful things that a data model gives us, is it as easy to make as a message model? Are there extra little bits of effort that come along? Surely it's about the same, right? I would imagine.
It can be. When it depends on how you're calibrated to think about it. If you're accustomed to only thinking in terms of messages, or if you have to think about it in terms of how you build software, then you really have to adjust the way you think before you can start building a data model. Or else all of your data models are going to look like, software class models, or they're just going to look like a message model. An interesting story, we were working on a standard, and there were 9 different things represented in a message set. They had a video, a clip, and an image. And for each one of those, they had an infrared, a visible light, and then something called a multispectral. So it exists in different wavelengths, right? So we have 3 times 3, we have 9 different things. And when scale went in and did our data modeling work, we ended up with 1 thing. Well, how is it 1 thing? Well, a video, well, let's talk about an image. An image is a single frame of a clip. A clip is a video that has a start time and an end time. And a video is just an on-running collection of individual frames.
Right.
Right. They all relate. So when we modeled it and we created the data model, we took 9 things and made 1 thing. And of course, everyone got very upset with this. They're like, well, but where's my video? It's like, well, it's right there. No, that's an image. Well, it's the same thing when you just put a bunch of them together. The point being, it can be easier to document the data model, but you have to be far more intentional in how you're putting your data model together. You can't run in automatic mode quite as much. So if a measure of hardness is thinking, then, oh, yeah, it's hard. So one of the main goals in building a good data model is to make sure that we don't bake in certain concepts that are only amenable to one way of implementing. And that's one of the things that we've learned through lots of experience is there are so many different ways that people interact with data that you have to make flexible patterns and you have to connect things together flexibly. It's really beyond the scope of like a single podcast to try and dive into that. Maybe that's a future topic. I'd really like to tee something up for our next chat, but I'm not sure what that's going to be yet. What do you guys think?
I think an interesting thing to discuss would be, you know, whenever we talk about complexity, there are types of complexity. You know, sometimes there is fundamental complexity in that a problem is actually hard. This appears a lot of the times with business logic. You know, maybe the rules really are just complex. Look at airline reservation systems. But there's also incidental complexity that can make things hard, but not for what I would call a good reason. And I think we see some of this with data models and message models. Historically, you know, message models, message sets, have been the way a lot of the world works. And so there's a lot of tooling, there's a lot of infrastructure already built for that. Data models, it's a bit trickier, but we're working on it.
Yeah, that we are. So, I think that's going to do it for this time. What do you think, guys?
I think we hit all the points that we wanted to for this one. Tune in next time to hear us geek out over data models a little bit more.
That'd be great.